Hi, you're tuned to the Channel of Truth. It's Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting to you via the Logos Radio Network on the 16th of August 2014. My name's Hereward Fenton. Great pleasure to be with you today, ladies and gentlemen. And in today's show, I'm going to be covering a few stories. I've got a few things to bring to you, a roundup of some important news. I have no major interviews scheduled for this show, so today's show will be a one-hour show, and for the second hour, for our live listeners, I'll be rebroadcasting one of our recent interviews. And some of the things I'll be talking about in the first hour include the topics of commercial surrogacy. This is actually something that's really turned into a major problem, and focus here on Australia, because a lot of Australians have been going to Thailand to have babies produced for them to order, and the Thai military junta has now moved to ban commercial surrogacy in Thailand. And I just think it's an interesting opportunity to talk a little about what that really means, what the philosophical and moral and ethical issues about surrogacy are. I think it's quite an important subject. I want to bring to you some recent 9/11 news, because there's been amazing developments with the various arms of the 9/11 truth movement in the US, with the architects and engineers, major presence at architectural conventions, and the petition from the Building Safety Initiative over Building 7 reaching the requisite number of signatures. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the subject of depression and mental illness. This, of course, has been discussed a lot with the death of the actor Robin Williams this week, and it's just an opportunity for me to highlight again some of the concerns that that many of us have with the way in which the whole industry of depression and mental illness is such a pharmaceutically oriented and such a deceptively misrepresented problem. There's a lot to talk about in that, so I'll be getting into that a little later in the show. And let's begin with the question of commercial surrogacy, though. I think that's a very important topic. Now, there's a couple of aspects of the surrogacy industry that I want to highlight. One is that it's increasingly being used by gay couples. Now, the big story here on the ABC today: Australian same-sex couple allowed to leave Thailand with newborn twins. An Australian same-sex couple at the centre of Thailand's surrogacy scandal has been able to leave the country with their newborn babies. On Thursday, two Australian couples with babies born through commercial surrogacy deals were prevented from leaving Bangkok International Airport. ABC News Radio can confirm one of the couples has now arrived in Singapore with their newborn twins, who were born last month via a surrogate. Now, surrogacy is an interesting conundrum, because in some ways it seems like a perfectly good and sound thing for someone who's able to bear a child for someone else to do that. And, you know, in principle, I think that's fine. But when it becomes a business, we really have to think about what is going on with the people who are requesting these surrogacies. And so when we see an industry, you know, like this, heavily dominated by people who are same-sex couples, you ask the question, well, okay, if these people are not able to have children in the normal way at all, is it right that they should simply be able to have children created for them in this way? I mean, it is such a deviation from the whole fabric of human society and reproduction and raising of children. Western society has become this sort of transhumanist experiment. It's the only way I can properly describe it. And we are constantly being bombarded with propaganda to say that this is perfectly fine, good, and in fact, the rights of these people are enshrined, and you must not even ask any questions about it, because if you do, you're some sort of homophobic bigot in the case of this. And yet, you know, let's just think about what it is we're doing, and let's not even focus on the question of gay or not gay. We're just talking about completely bypassing the normal methods of human reproduction and child rearing to create these new sort of artificial constructs, you know, like two men wanting to have a kid. So how can they do it? I mean, maybe ultimately men will be able to bear children themselves. I mean, of course, there was that funny movie from about a couple of decades ago where Arnold Schwarzenegger has a baby. You know, I mean, sure, you know, that's again, that's another type of transhumanism, isn't it? It's taking human beings beyond what they're able to do now, and it is presented to us as something that is good, that's something that we should be empowering. And yet we know that there are many aspects of what we might be able to do which could lead to horrific abuses, and particularly with genetic engineering and cloning. And there's been various Hollywood dystopic movies made about that. That you have to sort of ask the question of where our society is headed. Now, in Thailand, with the change of government there, with the government is now the military government that replaced the previous government, which was extremely friendly with the West, they have decided to completely criminalise commercial surrogacy. And I've just got an article here from The Guardian. Thailand to ban commercial surrogacy in the wake of Gami scandal. The military government approved draft law that will effectively stop foreign couples paying for pregnancies in the country. Thailand's military government gave preliminary approval for a draft law to make commercial surrogacy a criminal offence following a spate of dramatic surrogacy scandals in the past 2 weeks. The case of an Australian couple accused of abandoning their son, who has Down's syndrome, with his Thai surrogate mother, unleashed an international outcry over a business that rights groups say preys on poor and vulnerable women in countries such as India and Thailand. The NCPO has approved a surrogacy draft law. We will push through criminal law those who practice and are involved in commercial surrogacy, the spokeswoman added. Those who hire surrogate mothers or make this a commercial business will be violating criminal law. David and Wendy Farnell, the Australian couple at the centre of the story of baby Gami, now 7 months old, told Australian television that they wanted to keep both babies but had to leave Thailand with only Gami's twin sister after the Thai surrogate threatened to involve police. Well, it also turned out, folks, that that the father of the baby Gami had like 20 convictions for sexual offences with children. And again, you can say that's just coincidence. But You see, the practice of surrogacy is drawing certain people towards it. It is an extreme deviation from the natural method that people have been using for millions of years to create children. And the type of people who are drawn towards it are somewhat maybe different to your average. Now, what that means is that a lot of people, it is certainly drawing a criminal element. The huge story that we covered on this show from last year of the gay couple who lived in Australia who had acquired a child from a Russian mother has highlighted the fact that children procured in this way are vulnerable to being used for child trafficking. So I just leave that with you to consider. It's certainly been quite an odd story. But let's move on now to talk about some other topics. Another subject I'd like to return to today is the subject of the 9/11 Truth Movement and some of the efforts that are going on in New York and other places to bring attention to the key issue in 9/11 research, which is Building 7 at the moment, because Building 7 being the building that came down without planes and without major fires. Well, the Building 7 initiative, which is the high-rise safety initiative in New York, has now reached a critical threshold. And I'm just reading to you here an article from 911blogger.com. Yesterday was a special day for all of us who have supported the high-rise safety initiative. After 3 months of pounding the NYC pavement, we finished our petition drive. We started petitioning on May 1st after 3 months of working to build support and collect donations. Thanks to the generosity and faith of so many supporters, we were able to raise enough in those early months to get the petition drive started on time. Still needing more funds to get it to our eventual goal of 100,000 signatures, your generosity continued to pave the way until this past week when we reached our final fundraising goal and then finished the job we set out to do. And this is actually from the 1st of August 2014. All told, we gathered over 100,000 signatures from New York City voters between May the 1st and July 31st, 67,000 of which were submitted on July 3rd and 33,000 of which will be submitted on September the 4th. You are listening to Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herewood Fenton. Great pleasure to be talking to you today. I'm running through some various news of interest to truth-oriented folk around the world, and I'll be doing more of that when we come back from the break. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Back here with Truth News Radio Australia. It's a great pleasure to have your company as always, and may I invite you to become a subscriber to Truth News Radio Australia if you are a fan of our work and our many interviews that we've done going back over many years. If you've enjoyed all that and you would like to give something back, I recently introduced a subscription system on the website, and you simply have to go to truthnews.com.au and you'll see big banners there that invite you to become a subscriber. So if you're someone who's seen the value of this show, if you've been a listener for some years, why not become a subscriber? Help me make the show better? Perhaps help me make the show able to survive, because it's getting harder and harder to make ends meet, and the pressures that we find do make it difficult. And a lot of people who have done various initiatives like Truth News Radio Australia end up giving up simply because it's too hard, because they need to earn a living, and because there are many, many other issues. I really want to take Truth News to another level, and I want to make it more powerful. I want to include a lot more interviews and video and live reporting. But it's just simply not going to be possible to do that unless we get substantial funding. And the subscription drive is the beginning of that. And I want to see if we can get 500 subscribers. So that was my preliminary goal. We're a long way short of that at present, folks. I think we've got about 20. So, there's something you can do today to really make a difference to the world, I believe, and that's to hop onto truthnews.com.au and become a subscriber. Of course, if you've only just recently discovered our show, no hurry, check it out. Of course, we broadcast live on the Logos Network in Austin, Texas every week. And if you're picking us up via there, certainly check us out. And I get a lot of great feedback from the listeners in the US, so I'm always pleased to know that that our show is a relevance. So let me just continue now with this story about the New York City Building Safety Initiative, just to finish that off. What is the New York Safety Initiative? Well, it is a petition that makes it incumbent upon the City of New York to honour a request for a measure to be placed on the ballot requiring the city to investigate the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7 and any future high-rise collapses. So what this means is that the petition, because it reached the requisite 100,000 signatures, means that they must place the measure on the ballot. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it's an incredibly important first step and an incredibly important testament of how serious and passionate people are in New York about this issue, despite the fact that the mainstream media tells us that there is no question, there is no doubt, despite the fact that the 9/11 truth movement has been consistently spat on and poo-pooed and vilified by all kinds of people across all the whole spectrum of mainstream and even a lot of alternative media. Despite that, there are these, you know, at least 100,000 people who are willing to put their pen to paper. And it's hard to get that done, folks. You know, it's easy to have a off-the-cuff opinion from someone, but to get them to actually put their money where their mouth is, to actually get them to sign a petition that requires personal details, means that this is really a serious issue. So, again, it highlights the fact that the news is not covering the news. And while we're on the subject of 9/11, let's just have another look at another topic. C-SPAN, the cable news network which covers the US House of Representatives, did an incredible 50-minute interview with Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And I'll just play to you a few minutes from it. Most of our listeners are very familiar with the topics that Richard is covering in this talk, but it's very, very important nonetheless, and a really incredible achievement of Richard Gage and his group to get this very detailed and very generous, well-presented coverage from an important and serious news network like C-SPAN.
Washington Journal continues.
Now we want to introduce you to Richard Gage. He is the founder of a group called Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Mr. Gage, what is that group?
We are a group of 2,200 architects and engineers, a nonprofit organization dedicated to finding out what really happened at the World Trade Center with the destruction of all three towers on that day.
And what do you have doubts about?
Well, the architects and engineers that I represent have found evidence that has not been told to the American people by the agencies tasked with explaining these the destruction of these towers, evidence of controlled demolition, particularly with the third high-rise that collapsed on that day in the afternoon of 9/11, World Trade Center 7. We're looking forward to sharing with your viewers that evidence today.
Well, let's look at a little bit of video that your group has put out, and you can explain it after we see it.
Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
Mr. Gage, that was Building 7, Dan Rather narrating on CBS Live.
It sure was. And most Americans are completely unfamiliar with this. In fact, architects and engineers around the world, mostly all unfamiliar with the third worst structural failure in modern history. I mean, here is a 47-story skyscraper. At 5:20 in the afternoon, it drops like a rock, and I mean this fast. Free fall acceleration, straight down, uniformly, symmetrically, as you saw. Now, a building with 40,000 tons of structural steel cannot fall straight down like we saw due to normal office fires, the official reason given us by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, without all 80 columns on each floor being removed simultaneously and then synchronistically timed floor by floor. So, Peter, we've seen this like the old hotels in Las Vegas, and as our viewers just saw, it looks exactly like a controlled demolition. But NIST tells us, no, this came down due to normal office fires. So you can begin to see the problem right off the bat. Normal office fires have never brought down a skyscraper ever before. We have steel frame fireproofed skyscrapers for a very good reason, and they have protected our towers for a long, long time. So the 2,200 architects and engineers that I represent around the world in over 300 presentations now in 32 countries and 82 American cities, they present the evidence for the explosive demolition. And that evidence is seen not only in the videos of the buildings, but it's heard by the first responders who cite the explosions in this building's destruction, who cite the pools of molten iron flowing like lava, they say. And in fact, Leslie Robertson himself, the World Trade Center structural engineer, cites a river of steel flowing. Now, these are evidence of temperatures exceeding 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. Office fires.
Just pause it there. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm just playing to you a clip from Richard Gage speaking on C-SPAN about Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We'll be right back. back here with Truth News Radio Australia. And I've just been playing to you a clip there from Richard Gage speaking on C-SPAN, the Washington Journal, and it's a really excellent presentation. It goes on for over 45 minutes, and you know, he was given a really good airing, and all the questions were respectful, just totally unlike anything I've ever seen on mainstream media before. I know C-SPAN has given the truth movement attention before, and it's an indication that they are that the people who run that have some heart, unlike the soulless ghouls who run the major news networks. But the really important thing to take from this, my friends, is to understand that all of our work has not been in vain. You know, don't be disillusioned. Don't be demoralized about feeling that there has been no justice over 9/11, over feeling that all of the egregious facts have not been given airing by the news or by our government. Because the truth will out. But what's so important is that people do not lose conviction, do not simply become cynical and therefore silent. Richard Gage is a man who has maintained his positive, clear, articulate, and relentless effort to bring this issue into the spotlight. And he also remains focused on the key point. He doesn't lose the message, right? And that's why it's very important to repeat it over and over again. That's why on this show I'm happy to repeat Richard Gage over and over and over again, just as they do on the mainstream media with their propaganda. In this case, we are talking about facts. Richard Gage does not put forth conspiracy theories. In this interview, some of the callers, there's callers towards the end of the show, ask various questions, some of them wanting to know what the overall conspiracy was, who did it, how did they do it. And, you know, these are all reasonable questions. They're questions that most people would like answered. Richard Gage would like to see them answered. But his organization and his expertise is not about answering those questions. He is providing one piece of the overall puzzle, and he wants it to be brought to the next stage where it will be an official investigation, and all of those other questions would ultimately be addressed. What he is focusing on is incontrovertible forensic proof that the buildings on 9/11 came down as a result of demolition. As a result of explosive demolition. Incontrovertible forensic proof. Now, the apologists for the government, the apologists for the system, always try to undermine that by actually trying to get Richard Gage to spout a conspiracy theory. And they even assert that, you know, without an explanation of how it was done, the what is irrelevant. I've seen this done many times. It's a very dishonest, sleazy, disgusting method of trying to win an argument. At the present stage, and with the limited information that citizen groups have, the how is something that that we simply can't answer. There are too many unknowns. So there's been speculation, and even Richard Gage occasionally has speculated, you know, that it might X number of men with X number of kilos of nanothermite might have been able to do X amount of work in X amount of time. But again, we simply don't know the logistics of how it was done, but we do know that it was done. And the facts speak for themselves. And just another article here from the same source. I'm bringing to you a number of articles today from 911 blogger.com, a great site for anyone who wants to know what's the latest news in the 9/11 truth and research areas. Chicago AIA convention activists net over 120 more architects and engineer petition signers. Experience has proven that when presented with indisputable evidence, the people who design and construct buildings for a living quickly grasp the cause of the third worst structural failure in history. Of course, we're speaking of the 6.5-second demise of the 47-story steel-framed skyscraper in the World Trade Center, known as WTC-7. But what if, in fact, most building professionals have never even heard about the collapse of this high-rise on 9/11? This incredible reality that the majority of our nation's architects and engineers are oblivious to WTC-7 is one of the primary reasons that AE 911 Truth headed to the Windy City last month for the 2014 National Convention of the American Institute of Architects. It was the fifth time since 2008 that our non-profit organization has attended this annual event, which this year was held at Chicago's McCormick Place, the largest convention center in North America. The nearly 800 exhibitors and more than 15,000 architects in attendance had an opportunity to hear AE 911 Truth sound a wake-up call about the impossible claims of the official story of collapse by fire of the three skyscrapers on 9/11/2001. And I'm just pulling here the full story from AE911 Truth. During the three-day convention, Richard Gage and his team of volunteers staffed a 10-foot by 10-foot evidence-packed booth where attendees dropped by to learn the compelling facts which demonstrate that the Twin Towers and a third building were all destroyed by explosive-controlled demolition. In addition to explaining evidence, answering questions, and handing out the AE911 Truth petition, they gave away hundreds of DVDs to those who visited the booth. Most everyone said that they would be quite willing to receive a call from us in a couple of weeks to ask what they thought about the DVD. Chicago presented what Gage calls some different challenges from other AIA conventions we've attended. In Denver last year, we had a groundswell of volunteers helping us before we even set foot in the convention hall. On the other hand, we went to Chicago with practically zero upfront support. We had a lot to overcome, says Gage. It's a testament not only to our message, but to the very committed volunteers from the Chicago area and well beyond Chicago who came through for us to make this event a success. Of the dozen volunteers who stepped forward, one was a local architect, Richard Wallace. When asked why he attended the convention, Wallace replied, "I know structures. When I saw the convention was here and you guys were coming, I said, why not? I've been watching these videos for years on YouTube, and the thing that strikes me very sharply is the fact that buildings don't come down the way that these things came down. Building 7 in particular was not hit by a plane and came down in 6 seconds." Anyway, I won't continue with that quote, but you get the general message. Now, it says here that over 100 people were convinced to sign up. I can't actually find the reference for that in the article, but it said that at the beginning of the article, over 120 more petition signers, so I'm sure that's true. So as you can see, persistence does pay off when persistence is coupled with extreme integrity, with a focus on what's important, sticking to the message. With Truth News Radio Australia, I'll be right back after this break. Don't go away. Back with Truth News Radio Australia. Now, in the last segment of today's show, I would like to focus on two topics which may seem somewhat disparate. I want to talk about depression and mental illness, and I want to talk about Ebola. I mean, what could those two things have in common? Well, they're both illnesses, aren't they? And they're both illnesses which are considered to be quite serious. In the case of Ebola, we are being told that there is an epidemic, and we're constantly being told that it's getting worse, and we're frequently told that it's much worse than what we previously were told. Let me just quickly read to you an article here from the ABC. Ebola outbreak. Evidence suggests a deadly epidemic is vastly underestimated, warns the World Health Organization. The scale of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa has been vastly underestimated, and extraordinary measures are needed to contain the disease. The UN agency says it is coordinating a massive scaling up of the international response in a bid to tackle the worst epidemic of Ebola since its discovery 4 decades ago. Staff at the outbreak sites see evidence that the numbers of reported cases and deaths vastly underestimate the magnitude of the outbreak, the organization said on its website. The outbreak is expected to continue for some time. The agency says the death toll has climbed to 1,145. Now, I just want to talk about for a moment the underlying nature of Ebola. Ebola is part of a class of illnesses known as viral hemorrhagic fevers, or VHFs. These are a diverse group of animal and human illnesses that may be caused by 5 distinct families of RNA viruses. I won't read all those out to you, but you can get all this, of course, on Wikipedia. All types of VHF are characterized by fever and bleeding disorders, and all can progress to high fever, shock, and death in many cases. Some of the VHF agents cause relatively mild illnesses, while others, such as Ebola virus, can cause severe, life-threatening disease. Now, the hemorrhagic fevers are more widely known to us under names like dengue and yellow fever. And these illnesses are endemic in certain parts of the world. And in some cases, in the case of Ebola, it is a certain part of Africa where we see it. And, of course, the death toll is very, very high. Now, this is a serious problem, and it needs to be dealt with, of course, by medical means. The people who are suffering from these illnesses need to be helped. But I want to bring to you a perspective on this, which is a little different to the way in which illness generally is portrayed by the media, which is tied to government and the pharmaceutical industry's view, model of human illness. the whole model of the medical industry, and this goes back more than 100 years, 150 years, is based on the idea of pathogens that attack the body in various ways, and we've got viruses and we've got bacteria. And the body, human body, is seen as somewhat the victim of these external agencies that come into us and invade us and in many cases sort of win the battle with our immune system. But, you know, there is another view of human health, which is more holistic than that, which many doctors and many highly educated and intelligent people subscribe to, and which is not contradicted by the evidence either, folks. There is evidence that human health and illness is a much more complex thing. It's much more, there are so many more factors at work. And the human immune system is a vastly complex part of our living organism, which is still only marginally understood by medical research. When we hear about disease epidemics, the way it's portrayed is always portraying the virus as the cause for the illness. And it sort of directs all attention to the virus in a way that is somewhat satisfying, I guess, for your brain, because it gives you an enemy to focus on. But it is such an oversimplification, folks, of the true nature of illness. Because so much work and research has been done to show that when people become sick, they actually become sick as a combination of the growth of some external pathogen like a virus or a bacteria, but also it is to do with their internal state that has led them to become sick in the first place, which is usually forms of toxicity. And there is a kind of a symbiosis between the external organisms and our own bodies, in that the virus or bacteria can actually trigger a process which is a cleansing process in the human body, which, if allowed to complete itself and if supported with adequate basic needs like clean water and enough food to ensure that you're not weak from hunger, that people can get better through their own natural immune system response. The philosophy behind this view is known as natural hygiene, and I do encourage you to just put that into Google and have a search on it, and it may relieve you of some of the paranoia that we have been induced to feel because of the way in which these epidemics have been portrayed, as if we have no natural defense against them. And the only hope that's offered to us via the authorities is vaccines or treatments, and in many cases, very, very toxic treatments. And of course, even cancer now has become increasingly treated as if it were a viral problem, because the system likes viruses. The system thinks it understands viruses, and viruses become a convenient enemy to basically focus all your firepower on, so that you think you're in control of the situation. But anyway, the evidence shows, folks, of real research and research going back hundreds of years, that the best protections against illness are hygiene and good diet and good quality of life. And that even applies to people who are sick. These people in Africa who are succumbing from Ebola, they're incredibly impoverished people. They're people who suffer from malnutrition. They're people who live in extremely dank jungle areas that are full of pathogens, and they have lack of access to clean water, and basic antiseptics. I am in favor of antiseptics. I think natural ones, though, are the best. One of my favorite is tea tree oil, and you just dab a little tea tree oil on any kind of wound or any little infection you've got, and it will clear up within hours. I mean, it's an incredible material. I do recommend it very, very strongly. Now, I did say I was going to talk about depression and mental illness. I've only got a couple of minutes to do that. Just briefly wanted to bring up the subject of Robin Williams and depression, because this has been in the news a fair bit. And they've been talking about the tragedy of Robin Williams, a great actor who succumbed to depression, although there is some question there about how he did die. And I certainly don't want to smear a great man, a great actor, by bringing up things that are rather unpleasant, but do consider that it may not have been a suicide, as you've been told. There are certainly indications from the scene, from the way Robin Williams was found, that it was a different type of activity which involves asphyxiation. There's a lot of evidence for that, folks. But there's no doubt that the man was depressed. No doubt that the man was depressed. And anyone who engages in those bizarre sexual practices must be depressed. And many big stars have been found to be doing it. Michael Hutchence, famously, of INXS. So the question here about depression that I just want to briefly put in your mind, we're going to come back onto this topic in future shows. I'm going to cover it in a lot of detail because it's been a while since we've talked about it. But depression is projected by the mainstream media as some external, unknown force. It's not a virus. Now, they haven't been able to pin it to a virus, but it is still treated in the same way, as if depression is some kind of disease that attacks people. And in doing so, they facilitate the approach of the pharmaceutical industry to constantly give you medicines to fight this illness. Anyway, we have run out of time to discuss that topic, but in future shows I'm going to come back to it because it's very important. It's something that is deeply misunderstood in our society. So that's our show for this week. Stay tuned for Hour 2 if you're listening live. We'll have a repeat of one of our recent interviews. Otherwise, I'll be speaking to you again next week. See you then.